I have to continue to do a better job of managing my time. You know, making sure that, give you an example, like after the Sunday game, making sure that I give myself enough time to be ahead on the next opponent. So, like, maybe that previous week on Friday, maybe watch a few more games than I watched this year on the next opponent so that I'm ahead on that. I think that I have to have a little more patience with certain things, maybe younger players, things like that. I want guys to be able to do it right now, and sometimes I have to be a little bit more patient with younger players. I think in some regards I have to be more demanding on things like line of scrimmage penalties. Like, we got to cut that out. I was doing this red area study, and we had too many offsides penalties in the red area, things that wasn't blamed on one person, or was just the offense jumped offsides. So be more demanding on those types of things and eliminate those penalties. So there's a lot of things that I can get better at. Yeah. Divisional games, first of all, like when they're being played. So Indianapolis, Jacksonville, Tennessee, when those games are being played, meaning let's say our first AFC South opponent is Jacksonville, and let's say week three, well, we're going to put a lot of work into Jacksonville between the time the schedule comes out and summer break. We've already put a lot of work into our divisional opponents, just like they've done with us, but when the schedule comes out, that's when it's really okay. Indianapolis is week two. Let's make sure we're buttoned up on what's going on with Indianapolis, who they've acquired, the type of team they have this year. So that's the first thing that I look at. And then I look at the crossover games. So, like, when those occur, meaning the travel to the East Coast. So we're playing the AFC East. So I know we're traveling to Buffalo. I think we're traveling to the Jets. So, like, you know, how is that travel taking place, and what is the game after that game? Like, you know, are we traveling to Buffalo and then having to go play somebody else on the road somewhere else? You know, I look at that because that'll determine how I set the schedule for those 2 weeks, the practice schedule and all that. Thursday night games, Monday night games, short weeks, because I have to start thinking about how we want to practice. I did a thing. You know, this year, here's a good one on your question. You know, I was going basically full pads on Wednesdays early in the season. And because of some of the schedule and the way that we're talking here, you know, a lot of these guys, there's a lot of contact on Sundays. So it's taking them a couple extra days to get back. So I changed. I went to no pads on Wednesdays, somewhat more of a lighter practice to a heavier practice on Thursdays. I want to be more prepared for that this year. Like, how is that going to go, you know, based on our schedule and things like that? So those are some of the things I look at.
Did you do that on your own, or the committee, your veterans committee?
That was more on my own. I think they didn't have to say anything to me. I could kind of, you know, when those guys are like, I'm not going to be able to go today because I'm my shoulder, my, you know, these guys – just have a ton of respect for these players and the contact of the game. I mean, it's just like, I mean, these guys putting it on the line every week. I mean, I just, every year I'm in coaching, I have more and more of an appreciation of the physical nature of the game, the violence of the game. And so I think that I try to do a good job of keeping tabs on that with our team. And as the year went on, we actually went shells probably week 12 through 16, week 13 through 16, we probably didn't even go pads. Try to keep our team as fresh as possible.
When are your OTAs?
So April 20th, we go for 2 weeks. That's phase one. And then the beginning of May is like another 2 weeks of phase two. So I want to say, like, right before Memorial Day through about the middle of June, we go 9 straight weeks. If I had the dates right here in front of me, I'd be able to.
You know when the mini camp is?
I want to say the June 15th, 16th, 17th, something like that. It's a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Is that about
so don't write the article and say this guy doesn't even know his own dates of his. I don't have it right here in front of me, John.
Did you change any of that from last year? Other than
five? Well, last year
one less because you're the second year coach.
Right, last year we were able to have an extra 2 weeks, I think it was, and so this year, we had to kind of condense the plan a little bit.
So you like everything the way you set it up last year and this year?
Well, we changed some of the things that we changed, like, kind of when we lift and when we go out to the field for certain things. So sometimes we're going to go out to the field and then come back and lift because the field isn't as strenuous as, you know, some of the other days. So we kind of tweaked a little bit of it.
You're always talking about, you mentioned Rick a lot. What's the key to having a good relationship between a coach and a general manager?
Communication. Every day. Every day we meet in the morning and before we go home at night. So, like, whenever we get in there, we meet. So let's say, he's good about it. Like, I'm kind of an early riser, so as most coaches are, I get in there early. And so, he'll let me kind of get my things together for the day, and then we'll meet probably around 8 o'clock every morning. And we'll meet sometimes for 15 minutes, sometimes for an hour. And it's always about football. It's always about players and personnel. And it's good. It's good. And then we meet at the end of the day. But I think the key to it is communication because, I mean, think about it. More than a year ago, we didn't even know each other, had never met each other. So now we're into this basically setup where we're partners in this thing and we got to put this team together to try to win a championship. So, like, how are you going to do that? Well, there's going to be disagreements. There's going to be a lot of agreements. There's going to be visions, you know, like, how are we seeing this thing? How do we see this player? A lot of film watching, you know, so I think it's all about communication. And I think that we communicate very well. I don't want to speak for him. He may come in here this morning and tell you we don't communicate well at all, but I would tell you that we do. I'm kidding. Oh, that's right. Just on the coaching side of it, so meaning that giving the scouting department more help on how we see some of those late round projections and those post draft guys, just helping those guys more is what I mean there. Yeah, I don't think our coaching staff did enough last year to help with that process, that part of the process. So that's what I mean.
Hey, Bill, I don't want to interrupt, but you know Chip Kelly very well.
Yes.
Chip's done a lot of stuff in the last few weeks.
Yep.
And the big question in Philly is Chip crazy? Do you think Chip's crazy?
No.
What do you make of all that?
No, and I've known Chip for a long time, and I would never doubt Chip. Chip's a very bright guy. He knows what type of team he wants. He's got really good football knowledge, and he's got a great vision of what he wants his team to look like. And so I would say that the Philly fans should have complete confidence in Chip Kelly.
What about the Sam Bradford move? I mean, he was out there. You know, you probably looked at him. What did you see?
Yeah, I think Sam Bradford was a number one draft pick, and because of some bad luck, he's had some injuries. It doesn't mean that he's not a good quarterback. The guy's he's an accurate passer. He's a very bright guy. I kind of have a relationship with the Oklahoma staff, and they love him there, and the way that he competed. I've watched him on tape. Josh McDaniels was a great friend of mine, coached him in St. Louis. He really spoke highly of him. So, again, it's about his vision for his team, and he feels like, you know, Sam fits that vision for his team. And
did you guys consider going in that direction at all?
With Sam Bradford?
Yeah.
No. You know, again, that's what's important about what I'm saying is every coach has a vision for what they want their team to look like. My vision, along with Rick Smith, our GM, is, you know, we felt like we had two guys out there that knew our system, that we knew really well, Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett, that we think can come in here and help our team be a better team. And so that's the direction. We feel really good about where we're at right now at that position. Yep.
Bill, how is using tempo in the NFL different or maybe more challenging than it would be at the college level?
Well, it's different because, again, it's more about the players. So from an offensive standpoint, the players on defense are professional players across the board, you know, more talented, obviously, than a college defense, and they're able to adjust a lot faster. So most pro defenses, they can communicate really fast, get lined up, and, you know, now what you're seeing with no-huddle offenses is the defenses are becoming no-huddle defenses, and they're just as multiple as you are on offense. So they may line up and show you coverage one snap, and then the next snap blitz you. So I think it's more difficult because of how the pro defenses are adjusting to it.
I know Chip has said they don't spot the ball as quickly at the NFL level. Is that something you found also, the refs and the officials?
I don't know. When we played Philly, they spotted it pretty quick. So I don't know. I mean, I think it depends on the crew. You know, certain crews will spot it quickly. Other crews will stand over the ball. And, you know, one of the things in our league is with the substitutions, when the offense substitutes, the defense has to have a chance to match. So I think the officials do a good job of allowing that to happen. So maybe it isn't as quick as college. But I know, like I said, when we played Philly, it was going pretty fast.
Yep.
You said Tuesday in June, right? So
I think it's Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You don't ever practice on Fridays in the spring with professional football players.
Because everybody wants to get the hell out of town.
The cars are running. The keys are. the smoke's coming out of the muffler. Yeah, right. I think the weekend after the draft. So, like, or maybe it's maybe it's not that weekend. But, yeah, right, pretty much right after the draft, we'll do a rookie mini camp for 3 days.
Bill, being friends with Chip Kelly.
Yep.
This offseason. Did it surprise you, or is that Chip is just going to find his guys? I mean, it was pretty stunning to everybody in Philadelphia, the big Eagles makeover.
No, nothing. I mean, Chip... you know, I just have a lot of respect for Chip. He's a very bright guy. He knows the type of team he wants. Nothing in this league should ever be surprising. Every coach, every GM is trying to do what's best for their team, what they believe puts their team in a position to win. And the thing that you respect about guys like Chip and, you know, guys like myself and every other coach sitting in his ears, we have strong beliefs in how we want our team to look and how we want our team to play. And that's what Chip's doing in Philly.
Some people think Chip is trying to find the college atmosphere or build a program in a way like that he had at college. And I don't know if that means short-term players or young players, but is that possible, really?
I think you'd have to ask Chip that. I don't know. I haven't talked to him about that. I just know that, like I said, I have a lot of respect for his knowledge of the game and what he believes in, and you know, again, he's trying to put together the team that he thinks gives him the best chance to win, and that's what you respect about Chip.
What did you learn from your experience at Penn State that has helped you coming back to the NFL in any way, or things that you can lean on?
I would say just from being a head coach, you know, when I went to Penn State, hadn't been a head coach before, and just the day-to-day organization. The different things that you have to stay on top of that don't change from college to the pros, you know, schedules, player needs, things like that. There are things that don't carry over, but there are some basic things that do. And I would say the organization of my time was the biggest thing that helped me in preparation for coming to Houston.
Do you and Chip still talk offense and all things football?
Not really. You know, I think it's more, you know, we're trying to do what's best for our teams, and we're just so focused on helping our individual teams win. I saw him here yesterday. He's a good friend. He's a good guy. You know, and we'll always stay in touch, but we don't really talk offense and defense too much.
And is there a certain bond up there in New England?
Yeah, I mean, no question. Yeah, no, that's the whole thing too with you know, I don't know what he would say, but I know just from me, we have a lot of mutual friends, and it all has to do with when he was at New Hampshire. He was a player there. He coached there. One of my best friends is on our staff in Houston, played for him at New Hampshire, John Perry. There's a lot of carryover. Mark Whipple, the head coach at UMass, we're all friends. Paul Gorham, just a lot of – Phil Estes, who's the head coach at Brown. We're all buddies, so it's been a relationship that's been around for 20-something years. Yep, you got it. Good to see you.
When you make personnel decisions in professional football, is it you have to be disciplined to not try to have a quick fix, to have players come in who are part of your plan to build the team and to stay consistent?
Absolutely. That's just my opinion. There's just no way, in my opinion, that you can look for a quick fix. You're not trying to put together an all-star team. You're trying to put together a team. And it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of film study, a lot of basically interviewing, getting to know guys, you know, in the free agent process and the draft process, guys that fit what you're trying to do. You know, in Houston, we really, it starts with this. We want smart, dependable, tough players, guys that are accountable to each other, guys that are accountable to the coaching staff. We want smart, dependable, tough coaches. And it takes a while to put that together. And I know that the fans don't always they want it right now. We want it right now too. I mean, we're not saying like we're going out here to dip our toe in the water in 2015. We want to go out and win just like everybody else here does. But we're also trying to put together a good team. You know, obviously we have a great player on defense. We have some really good players on offense, and then we need some more depth and some more really solid role players all around. So that's what we're trying to do.
You also have to develop a staff that's willing to cheat, right? Developmental coaches as well as, you know, coach guys with 5-6 years.
Absolutely. And I think when you're one of the hardest things as a head coach, I think most head coaches would tell you that putting together a staff is one of the most difficult things to do, especially when you're a younger head coach. And it's not that you hire bad coaches. You hire a bunch of good coaches, but you have to make sure that the coaches that you hire fit the belief system that you have, the vision that you have. And that's, I believe in Houston right now, we have a really strong staff. You know, if you look at our defensive staff led by Romeo, you know, Mike Vrabel, John Butler, Anthony Midget, we just added Paul Pasqualoni, Anthony Pleasant. We've got a really good staff of guys there that understand what we're trying to do. Offensively, same thing. George Gotze, Mike Devlin, we just added, our offensive line coach. Guys that are good developmental coaches but can also handle the 10-year vet and that understand the type of team that we're trying to put together. So I'm encouraged with our staff in Houston.
While you're focused, obviously, on your team, is your next look to what's going on in your division?
No question. The division, the AFC South, runs through Indianapolis. And for anybody to say that it doesn't is completely wrong. They've won two AFC South championships in a row. They have a great quarterback, a great coaching staff, really good players. They've added some good players in the off season. So, you know, everybody in our division, I believe, would know, well, everybody in Houston knows that the division runs through Indianapolis. And until you beat them, you're not going to win the division. I think that the zone read is very, very difficult on defenses. So I think that it'll always be a part of certain teams' offenses. You know, now again, I think the key to me personally, the key to having a good zone read team is having a quarterback that can run. You know, you're not going to run the zone read with certain quarterbacks in this league, but other quarterbacks you will. So I think part of your philosophy is if you're going to run the zone read, okay, who's your quarterback and can he run? That's a big part of it. I think at the end of the day, when you talk about spread quarterbacks, all pro-style quarterbacks, you know, college, in order to win games in this league, that quarterback at some point in time is going to have to stand in the pocket late in the game and deliver the ball accurately with guys rushing all around him. You're not going to, you know, to me, the passing game is so important to winning games in a two-minute mode at the end of games. So I think that whatever type of quarterback you are, whatever type of offense you came from, you're going to have to be able to do that in your pro career.
2 years ago when Kaepernick and Wilson and RG3 were just getting into the league, everyone kind of thought that the zone read would see a lot more. It seems like it's kind of gone back, like you said, in the status quo, where even those guys, RG3 became more of a pocket guy. I mean, like,
yeah.
Are you just saying?
Well, I think we spend a lot of time on the zone read because, like, you know, Jacksonville runs it with Bortles. Bortles can run. And so Jacksonville last year did a good job with it. So I think my point is defenses are coming up with different ways to combat the zone read, which probably, you know, affects how much the offense is going to run it because there's different looks that they're being given. You know, we spend a lot of time on it. The other key to the zone read that, you know, I remember like in New England when we were playing a zone read team, we had to figure out who was going to be the scout team quarterback to run the zone read to give our defense a look. Sometimes you may bring a guy onto the practice squad just to run the zone read so that you can give your defense a look. I remember in New England it was Edelman when I was there.
Yeah.
I mean, and nobody could tackle him, but he gave us a good look.
Do you remember who he was?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. I don't remember who he was. I don't know who he was emulating, but we were trying to figure out who would be the best guy, and he ran it in college.
Who was your guy for Texans last year?
We used different guys. Like we used Devier Posey, the receiver, to run the zone read in practice. You know, when we were playing Bortles, we used different guys. But I remember Posey was one of them because I think he might have done it in high school. And he knew the ball handling and how to run. So that's part of it too. You know, figuring out how to stop it with the right guy to give your defense a look.
Thanks.
Yep.
But when you're evaluating quarterbacks,
yeah,
you've done quite often now. The personality of a guy. I don't mean whether you think he's a really good guy or a jerk. More like the on-field demeanor. Is that a bigger part of the evaluation for a quarterback than for say a corner or a linebacker or a running back?
I think this is my opinion. I really look at the personality of a quarterback. I look at you know how much energy he has. You know, I want a guy that has a good poise about him, but I want a guy that like has a little passion too, a little fire about him. A guy that's you know a good communicator in the locker room. Going to come every time he walks in that locker room door. There's kind of a good vibe about this guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I think so now how do you find that guy? Like you've got to do a good job of trying to figure it out in interviews and you know maybe you've like with us with Mallett and Hoyer like we've had experience with these guys. We know we really like their personalities. But I think that's a big part of it. You know, how that guy, you know, the vibe that he gives off to his teammates.
What if that part isn't there but when you're watching him on tape you're seeing a superior